Hello, everyone. My name is Jordan. Welcome to the next episode of Beyond the Sermon. This is a way for us to go beyond the weekend message through conversations, questions and answers, deep dives into topics, interviews, and practical ways to engage throughout the week. The hope is that through this series, you'll be encouraged, challenged, and more equipped to be a disciple of Jesus. This week, I sat down with Rachel Gilligan to discuss the concept of how we become all things to all people so that some might know Jesus. In the most recent message in the series on 1 Corinthians, Nate walks through chapter 9 and talks about balance and how the church handles finances. And the end of the chapter talks about being a servant to all people. So we explore how we can do that in our own lives. Here's my conversation with Rachel. Well, hello, Rachel.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Why don't you explain to the audience just a little bit about yourself? What is your role here at Faith Chapel?
Okay. I am the kids pastor, or so everything from birth to fifth grade.
Birth to fifth grade.
Birth to fifth grade.
That's a lot of kids.
It's a lot of kids.
A lot of young kids.
A lot of young kids.
Good job.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit. So this week we're talking about 1 Corinthians 9. Pastor Nate talked about rights of the Christian, talked about especially the end, I can be all things to all people. But before we dive into that, can you tell us a little bit about how you even got to Faith Chapel at all? I like your story. I like how you've got some unique twists and turns throughout how you even arrived in Billings and arrived at Faith Chapel. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and then I went to school at Bozeman because my grandma told me that if I went to school in Bozeman, she would buy me a brand new pair of skis. So I went for it. Didn't know how to ski.
Odd incentive.
Odd incentive for someone who has had no idea how to ski, sure. But thought it would be a good idea. So came to Bozeman, lived in Bozeman for 6 years, met my husband. He was working for a road construction company. We were pretty sure we were going to move to Missoula, but then ended up he got transferred to the Billings office. So we moved to Billings, where my sister and my parents ended up. They had moved recently, so back together with my family. And so I went to school for elementary ed and special education. So I started as a long-term sub at a local school in Billings. And as I was looking at the next school year, should I continue on teaching? The executive pastor here, who's a friend of mine, he told me about the position in kids ministry. And so I applied, went through the whole interview process while also simultaneously going through the whole process through the district as well to become a teacher. And then was presented with two job opportunities within days of each other, and I then had to decide what I was being called to do. My husband and I prayed about it a lot. I cried about it a ton, not sure what to do, and ended up going for working here at the church as the kids director. And we'd been in Billings for maybe 6 months. Still, my parents were attending here, still trying to even figure out for ourselves what it looked like and what church we were going into, and just kind of jumped in and committed and have been so excited that we've been here for the past 4 years, but did not expect that this is where I'd end up.
Yeah.
For sure.
So can I ask, what you said you prayed about some of that direction. So what was the sense or the impression to even make the decision? Because obviously your life was headed in a trajectory towards elementary education. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's some overlap just in the sense of you're going to be working with elementary aged kids, but very distinct differences, obviously, between working in the school system versus, you know, being employed by a church. Was there a moment or a clarifying thing that happened in that decision-making process that was like, there it is, that's where we're going to point our life?
As we were praying about it, I think the prayer was that we would do what was best, one, for our family, but ultimately what was going to just give us the most opportunities for ministry. And we wanted our whole lives to be open and available to that. We had gotten into a house, and our prayer was just that our house would be a place of ministry. And so as we were looking at these two options, we just realized we just have so many opportunities. We're going to get so many opportunities within kids ministry, but also just within the whole church community to be able to have opportunities, ministry, just be a part of everyday life. And so I think that was the big thing that helped us make the decision, and that it was taking the aspects of teaching that I love, but getting to add in so much more to the community, like community involvement, mm-hmm. generational involvement, getting to also have a schedule that allowed my family to be more involved in ministry, me getting to be a part of it. So it, that just kind of is how we made that decision as we were praying about it.
That's cool. Yeah. That's a really nice segue, because I think I like the even question that you used to clarify that, to say, how does this best leverage ministry? So maybe, and this is actually a theme in some conversations I already had today, is what is ministry? Because I think it's easy for us to hear that word and maybe project our own thoughts, our own ideas, our own experience of what ministry is. So I don't think you're talking about vocational ministry exclusively. Yeah. You're using ministry as a broad, maybe lifestyle approach. So can you maybe expand a little bit on how you would define that word and how that ended up being a clarifying word to even drive a decision?
So we, I would say for ministry for us is just the action as well as being able to speak about Christ freely throughout our lives and the actions that follow up with that. So being able to have a home where we can have small groups and we can have people over for dinner and we can have a warm, comforting environment for people to come who are our friends, who we're getting to know, who are new to the community, having that environment as well as then this vocational aspect of getting to have weekend services, getting to be a part of events and activities that the church is organizing, but having it be more than just a building, having it be more than just events, but every aspect of our lives. And I think my husband does a really good job of that, in that he does it really well, probably more than better than I am as a pastor. But the idea of just that ministry is bringing Jesus into every aspect of our lives and not just what we would assume it would be in church, small groups, those things, but just around the dinner table, around as parents now, what that looks like. So,
yeah. So Paul talks about that in, at the end of the chapter, and it's a passage that I've, that's often stuck out to me, this idea of being all things to all people so that some might know Christ. And so what is that? What does that even look like? You talked about small groups, you talk about dinners, you talk about some of these elements. What does that look like for you, even looking back at some of your relationships, you know, coming from Bozeman or coming from Portland, or, you know, small groups, all those different things. What does that tangibly look like for you guys to, for lack of a better term, bend your life in a way, or as Paul even says, like, I am a slave to all people, you know, like he's submitting himself to say, I'm here to serve those around me. I'm serving everybody. So give us a glimpse of what is like a week look like, or what are some of those tangibles on how that's looked for you guys?
Yeah, I think I got the best example of that. And as I think about this passage, I always think back to when I was in college, my sister and I joined a sorority, and it was one of those where we went in and we're like, we're going to do this for ministry. And we had Bible studies in the house and they were not well attended. But I think the real ministry aspects came from this concept of, we are going to be at the house. We are living with 40 girls, which for some people that sounds like a nightmare. For me as an extrovert, it was a literal dream come true. I loved it. But even we just living day-to-day lives, going on coffee runs with girls, going on cleaning up vomit for in the middle of the night, just talking to girls through breakups, even experiencing our own issues. This idea of, I never thought I'd go into college and join a sorority and had all these stereotypes of like what that would look like to be in a sorority, but then to get to go in and just walk alongside people has been the best example. Watching my sister have intentional conversations with girls in the middle of the night as we're eating a bowl of cereal and trying to just figure life out, and how that has now shaped what discipleship looks like for the rest of my life, because realizing it is not just about these programs, but it is about just walking through life with people and being able to meet them where they're at and being able to just hear their stories and continuing on from that. So I think one of the ways that we do that in our lives now as parents is just one, getting involved. I think kids are the best because we're going to parks. We're getting to have opportunities to just talk to people that you wouldn't normally get to talk to. But kids just are the great,
the great introducers.
The great introducers. And so I've just had to even have cool conversations with moms at parks and just getting to talk to them, as well as I think opening our doors and being able to have families over for dinner has been a big thing.
Yeah.
My Josh, my husband, has a huge list of like, I think we should invite these people to dinner and these people to dinner and these people to dinner. So just kind of slowly working through that list in our schedule and using that as an opportunity to get to know people as well.
Yeah. And I imagine that list is also the most recent person that he met at the checkout.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How are you today?
How are you?
Yeah. He's so masterful.
He's so good at it. I am not.
Genuine connections, literally anywhere.
Yes.
Uncomfortably so for me.
Yes. I know.
Yeah. So how do you, in the midst of that, how have you, I should say, you know, one of the things that people can sometimes maybe accuse this verse of talking about is becoming a little bit of a chameleon, that you're never truly yourself or maybe never authentic because you're always changing and shifting based on the crowd you're with. And that, you know, I even think about some of the accusations that Jesus got where people were so upset with the crowd he was around and like, do you know who you're sitting with? Like, that's a tax collector. And his heart was service, right? He came, you know, he says, I came for the sick, not the healthy, my own paraphrase. But as we try and live that out, there's some values I think that we have to uphold. How have you guys figured out that balance between meeting people right where they are in a way that shows compassion and love, yet also maintaining some of those values, if that question makes sense? Because I think that can be difficult, because otherwise it feels like hypocrisy if it's like, oh, well, we can come in as judgmental. I told you that if you did this, you would be vomiting by the end of the night. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, oh, great. Yeah. Now here comes the person that's going to tell me I told you so. So how do you do that? How do you manage relationships to be genuine and authentic without judgmental or know-it-all, I guess?
Yeah, I think that that's something I've really had to grow and learn in, and I'm still continuing to grow and learn in, because even just thinking back into college, I think there were some times where I'd be like, well, I would never get caught doing this, or I would get caught doing this, and just realizing that what I think the biggest thing is having that accountability with people to hold you to the standards that we have set and that Christ has set for us. And if we don't have those people in our lives to be able to debrief with, to talk through with, and to help us hold accountable in those actions, I just think it would be so hard to try and do it. I know in college, that was my sister. She's so good at keeping to her convictions and staying accountable. And for me now, it's more my husband, who's also, my life has been filled with people who are rule followers. And I always say I just have held on to them because I would not naturally bend to rule following. But my sister, my husband, they are type A rule followers. And so having those people in my lives to help us when we're in those situations and helping, what is scripture saying about this? How can we go back to that? How does Jesus want us to interact in those situations? Because the great thing about having him be an example of all of that is that we already have what the game plan would look like for if I'm in a situation with people who have different beliefs, different lifestyles than I do. How did he do it? He tended to go back to scripture. He was kind and loving, but stuck to what he knew was right. And so being able to do that as well, and being able to say, I love you and you can do that. I'm just choosing not to do that.
Yeah. Setting a personal boundary.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think having people in our lives that can help us anchor back to our own value systems of, hey, you're saying this, but your actions are maybe contradicting what you've said and what I know you to be. So did you know that you're starting to drift a little bit?
Yeah.
Cause I think it's easy to drift, and
absolutely.
It can be so awkward to set some of those boundaries. I'm terribly, I can be terrible sometimes at like saying no to things because I'm like, oh, but what are they going to think of me? And I want them to know I still love them. And like all these things that are a value for me. And then it's nice to have people who speak rationally and go, they're not, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
if you exhibit that boundary, you're going to be just fine. Yeah. So how do we change our perspective to view people as people to serve instead of just to get by? And here's what I mean by that is I think there's intentional relationships we have with friendships surrounding like shared experiences, whether that's, you know, college experiences, classes, and being in the same room for hours on end or studying something together to working in the same space. We have shared experiences that just build relationships, whether we like them or not. Sometimes they're people that we don't enjoy, but here they are in our sphere of influence. But one of the patterns that I've found myself in, and I'm curious if you've got an opinion about this, would be sometimes it feels like we're just surviving in our relationships, and those difficult relationships that look different than ours are just survival mode. I just have to make it through. And sometimes that's our own family where it's like, oh, I just have to get through this dinner because I don't want this topic to come up or for them to bring this up and we'll get in a fight about this. But there's a posture in this verse and in even what you were just sharing that's an attitude of service instead of an attitude of survival. Do you have any thoughts on how we would shift that posture to looking at people differently? Does that make sense?
I think one of the things that I have to remind myself, and I don't do it perfectly and I'm still working on it, is just that idea that we all have a story and we all have things that have made us the way we are. And that even if on the outside someone looks like they have or have had the perfect life, they have things together, that there is probably trauma. There are things in their past that have built up. And so any person who isn't, we have difficult relationships with, I think just bringing it down to, I don't know their full story. Mm-hmm. I probably will never know their full story. But God loves them. He cares for them. And there is probably unfortunate incidences and people, sinful people who have been in their lives that have hurt them. Mm-hmm. And it is up to us now to keep that in consideration as we love and are interacting with them. And even if it is a difficult situation and they are hard people to be around sometimes, that just like we hope that we've received and we'd hope we'd get the grace for the things in our lives that have been hard, the things that have made, I'm sure, all of us into difficult people at times for others to be around.
Yeah.
That is the same and is true for those people as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Remembering that we might not know the whole story or even having an attitude of curiosity to ask questions instead of make statements. I like that. I've got two more specific questions I want to ask. And one of them is actually backing up just a little bit as you were talking about different stories. It made me think of some of Paul's language in that verse of all things to all men, where he talks about to the Jew, I became like a Jew, to the Gentile, I became like a Gentile, to the simple-minded, I became like the simple-minded. Are there strategies for that you found even as you've had to zoom in and out of different, circles of influence, so to speak, of how you still maintain being you in the midst of that, where like you've had to relate to a totally different, almost world, like you're stepping into a different world almost. And then, you know, now you've got this friend, because there's probably different friend groups in each area. Mm-hmm. Are there any, and I know this question might be catching you a little bit off guard, but are there any strategies that you found that help you step into those spaces and still be you, yet also meeting those people where they are?
Wow. That's a really hard question, Jordan. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're
so
welcome.
Much.
Yep.
That's really fun.
Really fun to spring on you right now.
Yeah. Right this moment. Yep. This was not in the email.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. No prep on that one.
I'm not sure. I would say some of the things, as I look at like all of the different places that I have, like all the different things I've gone through, all the different groups that I've been a part of, one of the things that has stayed consistent along that is just, I would say probably my ability to stay positive slash kind of more lighthearted in things. I don't know. I think that for me, being able to be a sounding board for people, but also being a release of, you are going through something really hard. Mm. That doesn't mean you can't still laugh or have some fun. Mm-hmm. And even if that's being able to let people have a chance to get it all out, to bring everything they need to the table, but then also being able to turn it around and say, man, that's awful, right, but there is still joy in situations. Yeah. And I would love to, if I can do anything to help bring that joy to you, that would be what I would love to be able to do.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Then on the flip side, what are, along this, again, super hard question, but like where there's maybe anchor points, and I love that, that thought of recognizing that takes a certain level of self-awareness to go, okay, this is one of the things I can bring to the relationship. Cause I think sometimes when people come to us and we're in different situations, it's easy to try and to be the be all end all person, you know, like, oh, especially if we're coming from a place of ministry or service, or, you know, I'm carrying Jesus and I want them to know Jesus. Like, we feel like we've got to just knock it out of the park and say the exact right thing at the exact right time. And then the clouds will part and everybody's crying and people are surrendering to Jesus left and right. But so to remove that pressure from ourselves and just say, okay, I just need to be me in that moment and knowing who I am. That's, I love that. But then on the flip side, are there areas that you give yourself freedom to be changing and to be a little bit different in different groups? Because I think that's maybe the great mystery of Paul's phrase is he did alter, he was trying to meet people where they are. So what are some things that you've found that help you allow yourself to be a little bit different in different situations?
That's another really hard one. Thank you, Jordan.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I think what you said before is something that I hope to be true, is that idea of just being curious about other people's interests. I think that that can be such a great start. One of the things it makes me think of, when my husband and I were on a vacation, we were going through some of the national historical monuments in like Boston and New York area. And one of Josh's favorite things to do was to go up to the park rangers in that place and ask them, what is your all-time favorite fact about this historical site? And they would just go on a tangent about what they loved about the battles and what this monument meant. And one guy even pulled out a map and he was like, let me show you this. And
I've been waiting for this question my entire life. I've been waiting for,
we just did it on our trip to Mount Rushmore. And he just went on, had this whole story about the workers and how they built the everything. And so just that idea of people want to talk about what they're passionate about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They love it. And even if you just could care less, you can take a moment to care about what someone's passionate about. Yeah. And even being willing to research it and spend some time learning about it. I know there's friends and people who were like, we do not care about this sport or this activity, or I really don't like hunting that much, but I guess if you want me to lay on a frozen pond and look for ducks and say, look, there's a duck, I guess you
can. You just really summed up bird hunting right there.
Laying on a frozen pond.
Look, there's a
and
duck.
Look, there's a duck. We'll do it. Yeah. We'll do it. Yeah. I came here and all my friends called it my Montana mountain woman experience. And I had to learn everything that there had to be about what it means to be from Montana. And I grew up in the suburbs of Portland. Yeah. And so that was just a lot of learning and looking dumb and being like, you should jump on that bowl. And I was like, I should jump on that bowl. Let's try it. Yeah. And just being willing to do that because the people you're around you love and care for.
That curiosity in the research and that heart behind it, I think that's really a really good way to put it. And even being willing to be the dumb one, like I've experienced that with people where it's like, instead of entering a conversation, I'm like, well, I don't know anything about it, so I'll lie and pretend I do. Like, have you heard of, oh, you know, and they're using some phrase that I've never heard. I'm like, oh, I know all about that because I don't want to look dumb. Instead of entering that posture curious and going, oh, no, tell me about that. Yeah. And then letting them talk about what they're passionate about. I get to learn about them. And then I get to be a student and learn about that thing that they're passionate about. And then maybe I can walk away with something that next time I run into them, hey, I went and looked that up and that's super cool. Like, yeah, that's a really cool perspective.
Yeah. One of my sister and I's favorite things to do, and we do it all the time, and some of our friends absolutely roll their eyes when we ask, is give us the day in the life of you, or give us even the week in the life of you. And our friends, especially our friends who went off to college and now they're in big cities, and we have no understanding of what that's like. We're like, okay, it's Monday. And so reluctant sometimes. They're like, I don't know. I go to school and I go to work and I go home. We're like, no. It's 7 a.m. You've woken up. What do you do?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, okay, I get my bowl of cereal. What kind of cereal?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Even just that simple question has allowed people to give us, we just learned so much. And people really want to share their lives.
Right.
And we don't get a ton of opportunities. And sometimes deep down, you're like, man, I hope they ask me. And they rarely do.
They never, don't turn it back
rarely
around.
Rarely do. Yeah. But that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, that again speaks to some of the servant-heartedness that you're trying to reach them. And so it is on some level supposed to be sometimes everything a one-way conversation where we are the ones seeking them out and saying, I want to see you. I want to know you. I think that's really beautiful. Okay. One of my final questions, I want to shift gears just a little bit, would be something actually Nate asked during the message this last weekend that I thought it was a really interesting question. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Would be, I think I got this down right, and if not, I apologize. Should the church ask people to adapt the way of the church or the way of Jesus, or should the church adapt to reach people? And then Nate's answer was both. And so my question to you is, what are examples of ways that we as the church, the broader picture as the body of Christ, what are examples of ways that we can become more comprehensible to people? And we've talked a little bit about that as we've gone, but just as a bigger picture, I think often there's, you know, Nate talked about the subculture of the church. You've experienced that. We've joked about the subculture that Christians can have because it can be super, super weird. And I mean, especially in the kids realm, like some of the things that are out there are just weird. And that's what people think church is. Mm-hmm. But there's, yeah, what are some examples of ways that you think, maybe it's even speculative or looking forward, of you wish the church would be better at this, and we get to leave with a little bit of a, oh yeah, that is a good future to aim for. What would be your thoughts on examples of ways we can do better?
I think one of the conversations we are just having today is realizing that whether you're a part of the church or not, there's going to be points and tensions in your life that we're all going to face, especially when it comes to having kids and being parents and being married, and just this idea that regardless of what you believe, you are going to have a 2-year-old yelling at you that they want something, and you're going to have no idea what you're supposed to do in that moment. And so I think one of the big—
This is just a hypothetical,
this is a 100% hypothetical. Yeah. My 2-year-old never— He yells at me more than—
Nor does mine.
More than 20 times a day. So I think one of the big things is just realizing there's so much of just the common human experience that we are going to all face, and how can we be a part of that for everyone? How can we bring light and help and community and just understanding to those aspects of life that are things we're going to all face as parents, as people, in relationship, in life. And so what does it look like to be a resource as well as just a place for people to come and say, this is really hard and I don't know what to do. And we can say, great, same.
Yep.
Absolutely. Right. We don't know what to do either.
Yeah.
But we would love to be there with you through it all.
Yeah, I love that idea too, because I think sometimes we can compartmentalize our faith, and there's this really pretty religious experience that we call our faith. And then there can be the messy moments of raising toddlers and raising— my oldest is going to be 6, and I can't believe that I'm about to have a 6-year-old, and that just blows my mind. And the arguments that we have are I just am like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to raise this kid. And yet our faith can be incredibly, what we believe can be incredibly practical for those moments, right, and intersect those moments if we allow it to, instead of compartmentalizing. Right. And so I love, I think you said the normalcy of life, that it can be a part of just the everyday moments. I think that's really neat. My final question to you would be, are there ways that you, from your experience and this whole, the whole broad picture of this conversation, how would you challenge or encourage people? Any last words, last charge, so to speak?
I would say, as I'm going through this process, just realizing that when an interaction or a relationship or something doesn't go to plan, that doesn't mean you stop trying. And that we are, it is our call and it is our great mission to go out and be in relationship with people. And that doesn't mean that if it doesn't work with someone, it's not going to work somewhere else, or it's not going to be that we should just give up. Like, I tried to talk to this person at a coffee shop and I got shut down. Right. So I'm never talking to anyone again, kind of thing. But that we have a God who cares and loves and wants us to keep pushing through that rejection, keep pushing through those awkward moments, and that we, that's what we get to be called to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. That's a neat thought. Cause I think sometimes too, we have this expectation of, oh, I'm going to go try this. And because I'm doing it to love Jesus, I'm going to be awesome at it.
Right.
and it's just not going to be that.
Or they're going to be really receptive because I tried.
Yeah. They're going to receive my kindness with that reminds me, because there was one time I saw this guy. It was super cold. It was like one of those winter days where it's like, I think the high that day was like 8 below 0, and it was so cold, and I didn't want to just hand him cash. And so I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go buy him a latte, and I'm going to go sit with him, and I'm going to ask him about his story. And I'm just going to, that's what I'm going to do. And I was like, okay, this seems great. And I felt it was one of those moments where it's like, I felt like that was a Holy Spirit moment where I was like, oh, nice. I'm responding. I think I'm like 19 at the time. So I just am like, this is great. And so I go to Starbucks or just generic coffee shop in Billings and grabbed a couple of lattes, and I went back and I walk up to him. I was like, hey man, you looked cold and I just thought we could share a coffee together. And he goes, no, I don't want it. And I didn't know what to do. So I was like, but I bought it for you. And he's like, I don't want it. I was like, but I got it for you. And I just like, I was so panicked because I didn't know that's how he's going to respond. Anyways, and I just felt so rejected. And so then I ended up having two lattes to take back to work with me. But that doesn't mean we should stop trying or stop, responding to those promptings when they come. Cause sometimes they're just going to be, people go, I don't want your kindness. I don't want your service. Right. I don't want what you have. So that's a fun little anecdotal story of rejection.
That's a bummer.
Should we end on that bummer?
Yeah. That's where we should end it. Just like that.
You don't have anything lighter. Do you want to end it with?
I absolutely do not. I want you all. If Jordan ever tries to give you a latte,
just say you don't want it.
Don't take it.
Yeah. Just continue the rejection. Rachel, thank you so much for your time.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining for this week's episode of Beyond the Sermon. If you liked this episode, would you share it with someone? We'd also love to hear from you. I read all the emails that come in and respond to them myself. You can reach us at podcast@faithchapel.cc. I'm looking forward to hearing from you.